Hi, folks. Jack Spirko here. Today you are listening to an episode of TSP Rewind. Commercial-free versions of past episodes. Podcast blasts from the past. I put these up when I can't do a show due to professional commitments or rare vacations. These podcasts will appear in standard iTunes, Stitcher, and other feeds, but will be titled TSP Rewind episodes and numbered accordingly. And today, we are rewinding back to August the 16th, 2021. This episode was originally titled, Your Mind is Powerful, and That Can Be Dangerous. So we're only about 3.5 years into the past, and it's an August episode, so we can all feel warm in our hearts as the Arctic polar blast begins to descend down upon us for, well, January, when it gets cold out. And I just say that because I think that, you know, today is about controlling your own mind. And the media is about controlling your mind for you, and you're about to be terrorized with all of the reasons, I guess, that you should be living in fear that it's going to get cold for like a few days beginning around January the 10th, if they're even right, and they probably are in this case. It's a pretty obvious weather event. And then you'll be told, oh, this is because of climate change, which I thought was supposed to make us warmer and melt the ice and whatever. You got what I'm saying? Like, this is going to be another attempt to control your mind. Oh, by the way, did you notice something while I was gone, or I'm still gone yet, right? I'm not back yet, but do you notice something like I took a vacation because this, you know, time of the year came around, like between Christmas and New Year's, and you notice how, like, government workers don't do a lot of things at all, really, but they really don't do shit between, like, you know, just before Christmas until after New Year's. They kind of all use that generous personal time off. Did you notice what disappeared from the sky? In New Jersey, all through Christmas, the drones. Remember the drones? They're going to get you. The drones. They could be Chinese. They could be aliens. They could be from other worlds beyond the moon. They're just disappeared. Nobody's talking about them anymore. They're all gone. Yeah. Interesting. Another mind control operation. See, we live in a world today where there is a battle for control of the mind between the people that want to control the people and the people that have the minds. But there's another battle, and that's what this episode's really about, and that's an internal battle. You have to learn to tune them out and to only take from them what is actually useful and actionable into your life. Like, that's something you have to learn to do on your own. But internally, the struggle's actually much more difficult. See, there's something really dangerous inside of humans. Above all people, we tend to trust ourselves. We wouldn't lie to ourselves, would we? Well, yes, we would, especially when we have false information that we believe is real, and then we put that information into our brains and we process it with this 3 pounds of fat and neurons called the brain. And that actually kind of unimpressive-looking thing, when you look at a human brain, and you don't look at it as a scientist or a doctor or somebody that understands neural science or something like that. If you just look at it as a thing, it kind of looks like a big lump of fat, which is basically what it is. But what it really is the most powerful computer in the known universe. Does it mean there's not some being out there with superior computers for brains? It doesn't mean that we will never develop a true artificial intelligence that's actually a more powerful computer than our brain. But right now, even now, with ChatGPT and its 12 big introductions last month and whatever, it pales in comparison to what the human mind can do. ChatGPT actually doesn't do anything. Almost all the AI tools don't do anything until a human tells them to do it. The ability to actually plan and act with sentience is what makes us so powerful as a being. You are powerful. And I don't mean in some, like, you know, Tony Robbins break a board. You're powerful. Look, I taught you how wood grain works. And I taught you not to believe that you couldn't do it. It turns out that a 7-year-old girl can break a board like that. Like, I don't mean you're powerful that way. I don't mean you're powerful woo-woo. We even get into the woo-woo thing. Now, some of the woo-woo thing actually overlaps with real science, right? But I'm not talking about it that way. I just mean you are powerful. Let's put it this way. Let's say if you wanted to be powerful for evil, you have enough power to figure out where a lot of people are, get in a car, and drive through the crowd and kill hundreds of people. That's powerful. It's not good, but it's powerful. Power can be used for good and bad. You get that. One person, you could decide whether it's good or bad for yourself, but one person pretty much flipped Pennsylvania to Donald Trump and guaranteed the Republicans the election of 2024. His name was Scott Pressler. Now, I'm not telling you to go out and be political, because I'm not, and I don't care. But it's I cannot deny that that happened, that this one man registered like 80,000 Amish people in a swing state, and then the state swung back to Republicans. Like, the fact that one man did that shows you how much power a person can have. Think about some of the greatest names from history and the way that they changed the world with ideas and thoughts more than actions. That's powerful. Why do I say all this today? So you'll really dig into this Rewind episode when we go back to that time when I created it. See, this episode actually came out when I was doing Miyagi Mornings. I was doing these little shorts every morning and then doing a podcast later. And I did a Miyagi Morning episode on this concept, and it exploded with so much in my head after doing it. I'm like, I had to talk about it, and it brought this episode up. And the whole premise of this episode is, you have, and I didn't put it this way in the episode, that's why I've added this material, you have this incredibly powerful capability. You're able to solve problems. You're able to see a problem before the problem is a problem if you choose to do so, and head off the problem before it even happens. Okay, not just because somebody told you to do it, not because you followed a procedure, because you personally evaluated where the biggest threat to this personal thing that's important to you comes from. You gamed out how it could occur. You looked for places where it was already beginning. And then you shut it down before it fully manifested. That's powerful. Like I said, you could have power that can be used for good or bad or indifference. And no one ever told you that. No one ever told you that. No one ever put it that way. Let's take an analogy, because I think analogies help people understand. Let's say you have somebody in front of you, 20-year-old man, certainly old enough to legally possess, 22-year-old man, so anywhere in this country, old enough to legally possess a gun. And you believe people have a right to have a gun. And you ask this person what they know about guns. And they say, I've never held a gun in my life. And you say, well, look at this. This is a gun. Let's say it's a handgun. It's a revolver. It's a .357 Magnum 6-inch barrel Ruger Redhawk. Right? And you say, this is a gun. It's one of the more powerful, not the most, but one of the more powerful handguns in the world. You can kill a deer with it. You can kill a bear with it. It's loaded with very well hand-loaded rounds. These are very powerful rounds, 158 grain flat points, maximum H110 load. Person has no idea what you're talking about, but they're nodding their head. Wow, that's great. Like, and you explain like how it works. You say the bullet comes out here, you pull this trigger, it goes off. You carry it in a holster, and you say, now you understand how it works. And they pick it up and they fundamentally can load it, unload it, fire it, right? They understand the mechanics. You say, no, off you go. And this person, up until that moment, was totally ignorant that firearms even existed, let's say, in this hypothetical analogy. What have you done? You've almost guaranteed a disaster at some point. That person is likely going to do something bad with that gun. They're going to accidentally shoot somebody. They're going to get depressed and kill themselves. They're going to blow a hole in their leg. Right, it's going to go off in a place, no one's going to get hurt, but it's a place where it shouldn't have went off because they don't have basic gun safety. They're going to get arrested for negligent discharge, and they're going to go to prison, and they're going to have a felony on their record, and they're never going to be able to hold a gun. Why? Why? Because all you taught them was the basics of how it functioned. You didn't explain the totality of the power. They didn't have enough respect for the power. So they wielded the power in an irresponsible manner. Okay, that's your fucking brain, okay? Your brain is more powerful than a gun. Way more powerful than a gun. I could take all guns and evaporate them from Earth. If I was like, that comic book guy that can snap Thanos, right? All guns, and all the guns just disappear. There are no guns. You can still kill thousands of people if you choose to. You can still cause immense misery if you choose to, just with your brain. No one ever explained that to you. Now, because we have something called morality innate in us, unless we are broken psychologically as a human, whether it be because of some defect at birth or some trauma that we experience as we mature. But most people in the world, regardless of their religion, etc., they have some level of morality. They don't want to harm others. This is a check on that power. But there's one place that that power remains unchecked unless we check it for ourselves, and that's internally, you understand. And so one of the real problems is you'll hear people in the woo-woo space say, there is no upper limit to what the mind can achieve. And I will say, you are full of shit, and you want to sell books and seminars to people that want to feel happy. I don't agree with you at all. There are absolute limits on the achievements that the mind can make upward. Because do we have a fusion reactor the size of a deck of cards that can power a city? No. Okay, there's a limit. We haven't done that. We may have it someday. We may and we may not, but there's a limit. No one's done it. That's a limit. There's things that we... traveling faster than the speed of light, like Star Trek. I think most people don't even understand the ridiculous speeds they claim on Star Trek. Like, warp 9.975. That's about 1,040 times the speed of light. And it's still ridiculously slow across our solar... or not our solar system, but across our galaxy. It's still ridiculously slow. If you actually wanted to explore the galaxy the way they claim to there, right? That is a good understanding of how limited we really are. Even in our imagination, even in the absurdity of being able to travel that fast beyond the laws of all known physics, we're still limited fundamentally. There's a limit on how high we can go with just our mental power, no matter what anybody tells you. It's still amazing how far we can go and what we can do and what we have done as a species, but there's a limit. The problem is there is another side of that sword, and that side is unlimited in what it can achieve, and that's to the negative. The mind is so powerful it can talk a person with a wonderful potential life in front of them into hanging themselves in their bedroom with their belt when they're barely old enough to drink a beer. That's dangerous. And nobody ever told you that. Nobody ever explained to you that you were walking around with a supercomputer in your head that if you didn't use it right could harm you and others. No one ever pointed it out that way. In other words, no one ever gave you the operator's manual for your brain to understand that what you say inside your mind has power. And it will continue to run as a background process, just like a background process on a computer, and a whole lot more. So this new intro went a little longer than I planned, which is probably good. You haven't heard from me, live for quite a while. So that's probably a good thing. But I'm going to save it from here, and I'm going to go ahead and drop you back into the old episode from August 16th, 2021. Because this is a topic we will be revisiting in the first quarter of 2025. And as you listen to this episode, I want you to understand not to be afraid of this powerful tool you have, but to have respect for it. And as we head into 2025, realize we are now a quarter of the way through the new century. You have lived a quarter of the century, assuming you're older than 25 years old, in the 2000s. A quarter away through what is generally seen as kind of the limit of a human life. And if you're like me... you lived your first quarter of your human life before we came into this century. Tick tock. The clock ticks for us all. A new year's on the way. It will hit us tomorrow morning when we wake up. We stand in the year 2025. And your mind is powerful, and that can be dangerous. It also can be, when properly understood and harnessed, amazing. I give you this lesson today so that you will mind and respect the power of your brain. So you will not let it damage you. So you will not test the theory of, is it completely limitless to how low it can go? And instead, you will push the upper limits of what can be done. With that, let us rewind back to August the 16th, 2021. Your mind is powerful and that can be dangerous. Originally episode 2936. With that, let's dig into this. I wanted to start out with a quote for you today, because nothing that I'm going to discuss with you today or reveal to you today is new. This quote goes all the way back to Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius. So this is thousands of years old, this quote. He said, "You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength." Now, if I could change one word in this quote, I would change it to the following. You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find power. What's the difference between power and strength? They're synonyms. To me, in this context, strength is more of like a physical attribute, right? Strength is ability to, and I know you can have mental strength or whatever, but I don't really like the word here. Because when I think of strength, I think of like the ability to lift a barbell or something, push a car. Power can exist as physical or mental strength, but power can exist almost outside of yourself. Power is the ability to accomplish things or to encourage things or to get things done. Marcus Aurelius, of course, was a politician. Politicians are quite fond of power. Maybe it's why he didn't use the word. I don't know. But if you think of somebody that truly has power, they may be able to simply command something and it gets done. Wave a hand and it gets done. And the type of power that we're going to talk about today often will require you to do a thing, but a lot of it is like that kind of power that a politician has. Think of yourselves as the president, emperor, call it whatever, of your body. And you can give a command to your mind. Solve this problem. And if you did that, and you were an emperor, and they brought somebody before your court, and you said to a scientist, go figure out how to do this thing, to make this weapon system better, right? Or you gave one of your generals a command. I want you to go come up with a plan of defense for our outer territories or whatever. You wouldn't think about that a lot more after that. You certainly wouldn't go build the plan yourself. You've given the order. You know that you're authority is respected. You expect whoever you gave this to go out. And now you might check up on them. You might say, hey, how are we doing with that plan? How are we doing with that technology? How are we doing with solving this problem? You might fire them and bring somebody else on. But if you have good people, all those commands are actually moving with power all the time. When you take a nap, it's still happening. Right? When we build a business, it works a lot the same way. I was explaining it to my grandson recently, you know. We were fishing on a Friday. Instead of him being in school or me working, we went fishing. And I explained to him, I'm still being paid because of the power of a business. The kind of power we're talking about tapping into today, the power of the mind, works the same way. When we give the mind a command, figure this out, solve this problem, we then go on with life, and we can't sit around all day contemplating, you know, one problem or one thing that needs to be solved. We have lives to live. We have businesses to run. We have jobs to do. There's all types of things that require our mental computer. But what we tend to not understand as beings is this mental computer is so powerful that when you initiate something, it's like thinking of your computer running a background function. Your actual desktop or your laptop computer. You set a program in motion, you pull up another window, you start working actively with one and the other window's in the background. It's still going. It's still doing whatever you told it to do. This is how the mind works. And the mind will be running this at that subconscious level in varying ways. A lot of times your dreams are actually trying to solve problems that you've planted and ordered the mind to solve. Right? It's making sense of this. But when you're eating dinner and you're talking about your day with your spouse, there's still that background function running. And a little thing comes in. Sometimes you become aware of the background function. You've asked your mind to solve a problem. You haven't actually focused on it much anytime recently. You see a thing and you say, oh, I could use that, or maybe that applies to this thing. Now, how did that happen? How did that happen? You know, maybe you were trying to fix something on your homestead, and you're walking through a store, and you went there for something totally different, and you see a piece of hardware that you've never noticed before, and you say, oh, if I take that and this other thing and put them together, that thing that I was worried about last week that I forgot all about, maybe that'll work. How did that happen? It only happened because over that week or month or whatever it was, or day, that you weren't thinking about it. You were. It was there. It was running. The mind was trying to figure it out. And you just happened to get into a point where it was like calling that window to the front to look at it again. It didn't remind you of it. Your mind was already seeking it. And we'll come back to how important that is when we talk about some things that people think of as being kind of woo-woo that aren't at the end. But I want to start out with just how does your mind work based on what you command it to do? And we've just kind of covered that to a degree, but I want to go a little deeper into it. The human mind evolved to solve complex problems. That's its primary function beyond like the basic things so you don't die. Like keeping your heart beating, keeping your breathing going, allowing physical movement, etc. When we look at it beyond the same thing that every other creature on the planet's little brain does, what our brain does that's different is solve problems at a higher level. Even primates that figure out how to make tools or something, their problem-solving ability compared to our own is incredibly weak. It doesn't. We're not sure because we can't actually have a conversation with a chimp or a higher organism like a dolphin or a whale. But it seems that they're not even really completely sentient in the way that we mean that word about ourselves, where they contemplate their own existence. They just are. Now, I think there are some animals that are way more intelligent than we understand, ocean mammals being one of them. And I do think they communicate with each other in a way that's probably higher than we think it is. But we've seen nothing in their behavior that would indicate they contemplate, for instance, their mortality of themselves at any given time. Dogs are extremely intelligent, but they live so in the moment. Any good dog trainer knows this, and you harness it to train and work with your dogs. I guess the closest thing that I've seen in nature to contemplating mortality is an animal being able to understand it in another animal, understanding that animal's dead and actually having sorrow. Elephants are one of the most intelligent animals on our planet, as far as I'm concerned, and they literally mourn their dead. They have graveyards. They visit them. They cry. They freaking cry. I mean, that's about as high level as it gets in that animal kingdom, but it's nothing compared to our minds. So our minds have this ability to not only understand our current situation, but to fully understand our potential futures, to understand that, yes, winter's coming, for instance, if we tell the story of the grasshopper and the ant. And the ant is motivated by instinct to do what it does so that it will make it through winter. But the ant can't contemplate this winter could be worse than last winter. It wasn't even alive to see last winter. They don't live that long. It can't contemplate it could be milder. It can't contemplate we might need more of one particular item than another this time around. It can't figure that out. It can't think to itself, if we just moved far enough south, we wouldn't have winter. Now, animals will naturally migrate and species will, you know, find and exploit niches, but they don't do it consciously. So you have to start from the understanding that your mind, and when I say your mind, I mean all human beings' minds, as long as they're not damaged in some way, at a functional level, is more advanced than any other mind that we're aware of. I don't pretend to know, you know, how much life there is in the universe or how advanced or not advanced. I'm not talking about it. As we know, it's that powerful. And so when we enter these commands, they do in fact become permanent imprints in the brain, and you can actually never erase them what you can do is execute new commands that override previous commands. So you could have lived without this understanding and been constantly self-sabotaging yourself and telling yourself, I can't, it'll never happen, there is no way. And you can write new code. You can say, there is a way, I need to figure it out. Brain, get to work. And the brain will take the latest command as the one to be operable. Sometimes if you've done enough damage to the hard drive for long enough, though, you might have to really, really, really reprogram things. But this happens. And I want to talk about, from today's title, why this is incredibly dangerous. Because the mind does not differentiate between a command to do a bad thing and a command to do a good thing. Morality does, right? If we're talking about, like, should I kill this person or not? That's not really what I'm talking about. Though it's, the mind is powerful enough that if you give it that command long enough, you'll probably end up in prison for the rest of your life. Okay? What I'm talking about when I say good or bad is relative to how your life progresses. So when you say, there's no way I'm going to get a better job, your mind doesn't say, hey, stupid, hold on a second. That's dumb. There's lots of ways that you can get a better job, right? That's up to you to make the decision consciously. I'm talking about the subconscious operational components of the mind here, not the decision part that you have a choice to make. Once you've made that decision and you enter that command into the mind says, stop worrying about finding a better job. In fact, our leader, right, the conscious mind, wishes to not get a better job. So if there's anything we can find to give back to the master and say, here's reasons, oh, sire, you are correct, find them. So then the mind goes on an excuse-making, blocking exercise to find all the reasons that a better job is impossible until it feels it's done its job, and then it goes off and does something else. Now, if you don't understand how dangerous that is, it literally means without knowledge that this is the case, you can limit your mind in hundreds or even thousands of ways that until such time you become aware of what you're doing and make a conscious effort to stop it will, for all intents and purposes, be permanent. And maybe semi-permanent is a better way to put that, because you can always make the decision to change, as long as you haven't run out of one of the commodities in our life that's truly finite, which is time. As long as you can still fog a mirror, as long as you still have life in front of you, as long as you're still functional, you can overwrite those commands. But if you don't, they're permanent. You put it into the computer. The computer is, in the end, the consciousness, right, is the way you have to think about it. Your consciousness, whatever consciousness is, and we don't really know, right? Your consciousness is you. Your brain is the computer that your consciousness interfaces with and through that creates results. Those results could be something as simple as there's a can of tangerine LaCroix sitting in front of me right now. I'm going to pause the recording, and I took a sip of it. I did that because I wanted to, and I wanted to make a point. I told my body, click the button for pause, drink the soda, put it back down, and click the button and go back to recording. Right? And that all is the consciousness using the computer to move the body. Okay? Again, when you execute a command that's going to run in the background, think about this thing. It's going to happen. And you can see this in things that are not directly applicable, but they show the power of the mind to run a function without us consciously thinking about it or even wanting to. Have you ever heard a really great song? That song gets stuck in your head. You can't make it go away. You're singing it to yourself in your mind, right? Maybe you're even mouthing the words or some shit. Like, you're doing something totally different. You're actually engaged in something that requires a lot of attention. Maybe you're writing a letter, composing an email, and da-da-da-da-da, the song's going in your head. You can't even turn it off sometimes, right? I'll tell you how to turn it off. Here's a little mental trick for doing that I came up with. Sing one line in your head of like 20 different songs in a row. So song A, song B, song C, song D, that'll usually reset, and you'll and as long as one of those doesn't pick up and become the next one, right? But just think about the fact that that happens. So when I tell you, when you say, I'll never get out of this dead-end job, that you gave your mind a command, and that command will run in the background infinitely forever until you change it. I'm not bullshitting you. I'm not. But if you, equally, if you give your mind a command, this job blows. I need to figure out how to get a better job. I'm not saying you can just coast through life using this little trick. I am saying your mind is going to continuously work on that, and you're going to see things and hear things and interpret things differently because of it, and you will find opportunities that normally you would have walked right past. You'll think differently, and a lot of stuff you come up with will not be the right answer or not be the right answer for you at the time. But each one leads to the next. It works a little bit like this. My wife has this puzzle she bought. It looks like an octagon, and it's got all these little pieces of wooden shapes that are made of octagons. And some of them are bendy, and some of them are straight, and some are what have you. And it's like a mental challenging puzzle. And there's actually a bunch of ways to solve it. You got to get all the pieces inside the octagon, like a puzzle. And she'll do it, the grandkids will do it, my son's played around with it, and they can all figure it out eventually. I figure it out faster. And, you know, some people would say that's an IQ thing or what have you. It's actually just a different approach. I'm always trying to see, once you get the pieces set up to where there's like one or two left to go in and they're not going to fit, where is that shape elsewhere in the diagram by moving the other pieces? They're trying to fit the pieces together. I'm going in reverse, right? And that's just a different way of approaching a concept. But that's in the front. That's in the conscious, active mind. It when you put that back-end process on, your mind will naturally do this for you. It will change the way that it's analyzing a thing. It will, when it runs into, think of it like a logic loop, where it just, like, it keeps getting the same answer. Sooner or later, the mind will then in the background switch and change the way that it comes at the problem. And then that's why at some point you'll see something and it jumps out at you as a potential piece of a solution. Or all the wrong answers actually are leading the mind to the correct answer. Because a lot of times the wrong answer has pieces of it that are right. And our minds are actually much more efficient at doing this when we let go of a thing than they are when we're forcing it and we're not ready for the answer yet, or we haven't figured the answer out yet. We haven't contemplated it long enough. When I used to do marketing work, my partner Neil would come to me and say, here's a thing we want to market, here's a client we want to market for, you know, and he'd be like, What's their, you know, their slogan, or what is the hook here, or whatever? And I would just say, let me make sure I fully understand it. And he wanted like an answer now. And I'd always go, ask me tomorrow. I'm not even going to think about it again, but I'll give you an answer tomorrow. And most of the time when he'd walk up to me, I'd go, oh, here's what we're going to do. And he would like, how do you do that? I let go, but I gave the command. Now, again, this is massively dangerous. Because if the commands are negative, the mind will operate those commands with the same authority, the same relentlessness. And if you don't get a, this is very important to understand, you don't get to decide whether or not this happens, right? You can consciously block it for a time, just like you can consciously stop breathing for a time. But with that, you're either going to become short of breath and decide to start breathing, or you're going to forget that you're supposed to be holding your breath and just go back to life, or you're going to pass out and start breathing, right? So the passing out and starting breathing option is kind of how this works with, well, I'm not going to think about that anymore. Well, you push it into the background, but eventually the mind is going to pick it up and run with it. And this means you have to be careful of some things. And two things, people, you have to be really careful of. Number one is other people that you associate with. If you're associating with people that are constantly negative and using negative language, engaged in behavior that you do not wish to engage in, but they're your friends, so you like them. Let me explain to you a couple things that are going to happen. First of all, the things they say and do are going to go into your mind, and they are going to act like commands, even though they don't come from you. And the computer will say, do you want me to execute this? Or do you want to give, since it's like being in a meeting, and you're the CEO, and somebody that's at a director's level says, we should do this. And everybody kind of looks at you like, are you going to agree? Are you going to object? Are you going to remain silent? And if you remain silent, people just assume, hey, Bill's the director. He said to do this. Jack didn't say anything. Do what Bill says, right? So that's the first thing that's going to happen. But there's something far more insidious that's going to happen. You're going to actually justify the behavior or the statement in some way, even if you disagree with it, by saying, but, you know, it's Bill and I like Bill. Nah, we can let Bill have some leeway in it. And I'm not saying turn into a prude, you know, banish all your friends into Nothingville or whatever. What I'm saying is when you have people in your life that are inherently negative and engaged in negative behaviors, you need to limit your contact with them because every second you spend with them, you are damaging your own capabilities. It is that serious. The other thing you have to be very careful with is the content that you consume. And when you're consuming content that is completely and totally fictitious, that's fine. You need to consciously think about that, though. You need to tell your brain, this is not real. If you don't, your brain will assume that it's real. Again, you're back to sitting at the head of the table at a board meeting, but if you remain silent, everybody thinks you've implicitly approved what's said. If you want to take control of the situation, you have to say, Bill's a moron. He's a pretty good director of whatever, but in this case, he doesn't know what he's talking about. We absolutely will not be doing that, Bill. Now, you may not want to be that harsh in an actual board meeting. Maybe you do. It all depends. But let me tell you, when you're dealing with your own mind, you have to be that harsh. This is why, like, if I'm watching, like, a crime show or something really stupid happens, I actually say, at least internally, if not verbally, that's stupid. That would never happen. Part of it is just, I've noticed it, and I'm that guy. But the other part of it is I don't want my brain to assume that this is possible, right? I don't want it to ever take that in and let any piece of it be real. And it's really important because, again, this is dangerous because, okay, look at it this way. If I give you, I was going to say a gun, but we need something that's a little bit more dangerous than even a gun. Let's say we could make a real lightsaber. And like, what was his name? Darth Sidious, the guy that had like the two lightsaber blade came out of both ends, like a staff, right? It's like that. And you push a button and one or both sides come out of this thing. And if it's pointed at something, it goes right through it. Right? If you give that to a person and they walk around with it, playing with it, screwing around with it, and don't know what it does, it still does what it does. And when you push that button and you happen to have it pointed at your own guts, you kill yourself, right? So we wouldn't give somebody something like a gun or a lightsaber or a really super sharp knife or let somebody drive a car that didn't understand what a car was and how it works. The computer that is your brain is more powerful than any of those things. And it's like walking around with loaded guns and not knowing what guns do. And the gun is going to function the way it was designed. But at least when you pull the trigger the first time and it goes off, hopefully you didn't kill anybody or hurt anybody, but you see it and you're like, oh shit, this thing's dangerous. And you think differently. The mind can misfire all at once, and until you become aware of it, it just keeps happening. And you have no idea the damage you're doing to your life and the lives of other people until you get a hold of this. And so you've got to be careful of the people you're around, the content you consume, and you either harness this power or it harms you. Again, you don't have a choice in this. As to whether or not it's there. Do you understand? I mean, it's so, to me, this is one of those things, like, I get it, but it's a little bit difficult to explain. You don't get to decide whether your mental computer runs programs in the background or not. The only thing you get to decide is what those programs are. And you have to be mindful at all times of this, or it's going to run junk. It's going to run garbage, and it's going to produce results based on that. And the way that we have to harness this power is to consciously determine everything in our life that we would like to be better and give the command to make those things better, to find solutions. And we can only get this computer working for us by occupying it with so many things that are for the positive. And it knows that, think again, back to kind of a hierarchy in a company. If I'm the CEO of a company, and I say to you, hey, Tom, I want your priority one to be this, I want your priority two to be that, and I want your priority three to be this. And you say, well, great, but Mike, who I work for, said that this other thing is supposed to be my priority one. And I tell you, screw Mike. I run a company. I just told you what I want done. You're going to tell Mike to go screw. You're going to say, I can put this in fourth priority. You have a problem with that. Go talk to Jack. Because when a CEO of a company tells me something, even if there's a chain of command, I'm sorry, I'm listening to Jack. If you want to argue with Jack, if Jack comes back and tells me or communicates to me that he agrees with you now, that's fine. But until such time, I know who signs the paychecks here. I'm listening to Jack because that's what he said he wanted, right? Now, a good CEO wouldn't do that, but in this game, you have to be that guy. You have to give the priorities to all the positive things because you'll never keep all the negative things out. You'll never do it. The human being is not capable of only being positive. There will be negative thoughts. There will be negative actions. There will be negative inputs. And so the only way you can really harness the power of your brain and not let it harm you is to give priority. And the things that are consciously given priority get priority the same way you'd listen to the owner of a company before you'd listen to some mid-level manager. Even if that mid-level manager was your manager. If I said, you know what, screw him. He can bitch all he wants to you about this. This is my priority right now. If he gives you any shit, let me know. What are you going to do? This is how your mind works, okay? And I mean, in that real-world environment, of course I should go to Mike and say, Mike, shut up. This is what I want your people doing. But I might also tell you, look, if he doesn't do his job, this is what I want. Until you hear different from me, this is what I want you to do. That's how you have to control your mind. And if you don't do it that way, you're screwed. You will be harmed by yourself. Now, I want to talk a little bit about how the world that we think of as scientific and the world that we think kind of is like woo-woo, right? Spiritual woo-woo, maybe don't have the clean-cut, absolute line between them that we think that they do. I do think there's a line. And I do think there are things that are clearly on one side of the line and one things that are on the other side of the line. I'll save my thoughts for Law of Attraction for a little bit later. But I think if you believe in the Law of Attraction, meaning that if I just see myself holding a gold bar, one day a gold bar will show up, you don't understand a Law of Attraction. And I think that's on one side of the line. I do think that the line, though, is maybe wider and blurrier than a clean, thin, perfect line that we could just say, woo-woo, science. Anything with this much power, until it's fully understood, and I'm telling you right now, we do not fully understand the human mind. We're not even close to fully understanding our own mental capability. We're back to any sufficiently advanced technology will appear as magic to someone who doesn't have it. When the Spanish conquistadors came to the New World, the natives thought they were gods
because they had things like armor and swords and rode on horses and shit, right? Like, and they were a different color or whatever. Like, they didn't even really have that much. They had primitive firearms. They didn't have that much more advanced technology. But they thought they were gods. Can you imagine if you were to go back in time with simple devices we use every day? What people would think of you? So what happens is there are certain things that we unlock in our minds. And if we don't fully understand how that unlocking occurs, we will attribute it to spirituality or faith or something like that. And we don't really understand it. Here's an example. There are monks that can go into the mountains of Tibet when the snow's on the ground and sit in a circle and enter a trance-like state and heat up their bodies until steam starts pouring off of their bodies and the snow around them melts and they're not cold. And that looks very metaphysical. It looks very spiritual. It looks like magic. It looks like, you know what? This must be a scam. These monks are scam artists. It's not. We do not fully understand how they do it, and neither do they. They don't fully understand. They know what they're doing, but how it actually happens, they don't really know. So it can be attributed to God or spirit or some sort of woo-woo, right? But it doesn't mean that it's actually outside of us. So I want to move on to, like, why this is important with something like the law of attraction. I'm going to tell you how I think. Now, I don't pretend to know everything, but how I feel the law of attraction works. You decide you want something. I want to start a business. I want to have more money. I want to be in better shape. Whatever it is. And you use some form of the law of attraction formula. Saying it to yourself 10 times a day, thinking about it, writing down a goal, whatever it is, visualizing yourself, having it, whatever you do. It almost doesn't matter. What happens is your level of awareness to anything that pertains to this goal skyrockets and goes up. And it could be simple or it could be complex. Here would be a very simple version. I've heard law of attraction people say shit like, you can literally manifest a parking place for yourself at a shopping mall during Christmas time and get a closer parking spot. This is nonsense. That belief that you can manifest it is way past the blurry part of the line and way over in left field and la la land. There is or there is not a space to park your car. However, you could be engaged in this exercise, believe in this exercise, and somebody somewhere from the corner of your eye is walking in a way that reaches a part of your mind, your spirit, your soul, whatever you want to call it, your consciousness, your subconscious, some place inside of you that has the ability to determine the way this person's walking is telling me two things. They're leaving and their car's not far from them. And they're close to the door I want to go in. With no understanding that you just figured that out. Instead of going right, you go left and up, and there's the person getting in their car and backing out, and you pull in, and you think you manifested it. The law of attraction actually worked, just not the way that you think it did. By being in a state of this heightened awareness and the background programming running, you picked up on a minute, seemingly meaningless detail that otherwise you wouldn't have seen. You might have made that left, right? You might have, but you might also have gone right. You might have saw somebody else that more obviously was leaving, but they were just going back to their car because they forgot their list. But that piece of you that is hyper-aware, you picked up on something that normally you just wouldn't have picked up on. Maybe if you were looking right at the person and trying to figure out who it was, you wouldn't have been able to do it. But because you were in a different, altered state of consciousness, you were able to do it without even realizing it. Any sufficiently advanced technology would appear as magic to someone that was not aware of it. So all of a sudden you think you've made some magical thing happen. All you've done is tune into your own capabilities. And this, if that can happen that way, and it can, then what also can happen is you see three things at three different times, totally separated by space and time. None of them seem like they are connected to how you're going to start a business. But because you are trying to attract to yourself opportunities to start a business, the background process, when it picks up the third and final piece, connects back to the other two that you didn't even know you looked at. And all of a sudden, you start to form a plan. And again, that plan might be a good plan, it might be a bad plan, but it's part of the process to getting to where you want to be. If you simply say, I want to become more wealthy, then you're going to start seeing opportunities to acquire wealth everywhere. Very quickly, you're going to get to the point where you realize that finding opportunities for wealth isn't the problem. Choosing the right ones to work on, because there's way too many to work on all of them, is the actual problem. And that'll go to this level with people and how they think and how they approach life. If you have two people and they walk a mile down a road side by side, and one of those people has done this exercise and they're looking to acquire more wealth, I guarantee you in a one-mile walk down a random street, that person's going to pick up on probably a dozen or more things that will trigger a thought of, there's a way I could acquire wealth with this. A person standing right next to him who claims to wish to be wealthy, who has not done this exercise, both of them with 20/20 vision, looking in the exact same places and see all the same shit, will end that journey and their life will still not have anything new toward the acquisition of wealth added to it, even though they both took in the same material. Because one was in a heightened hyper state of awareness and the other one wasn't. And this is how you train your mind to think. If you look at people that are successful, they all do this. They all have different ways that maybe they'll explain it, but when you look at the basic process, it's always the same. There is no such thing as I can't do this. There is only I could do this, this is what it would take, and it is or isn't worth doing. And that is incredibly important that you stay hyper aware of that as well. If I catch myself saying something like, oh, I could never do that, or that'll probably never happen, I always kind of rewind, hit like a stop process button, go through it again, and make sure that I am aware there are ways to do it. If I want to grow coffee in Texas on my property right here, which is harsh and goes below freezing at times, and coffee doesn't live, it is easy to say, well, I'm not going to grow coffee here. You can't do it. That's a dumb statement. I'm not going to grow coffee here, but I could do it if I invested tens of thousands of dollars in a climate-controlled greenhouse to get a very small yield, but it could be done. Possibly there's a way to genetically modify coffee so that it can exist in colder climates. If you grew enough coffee beans from seed, you know, enough coffee from seed long enough, maybe you'd find a there's ways to do it. It's probably not worth my time. I don't care that much, and I don't want to spend that much time and money. But I want to acknowledge it could be done. And if I don't do that, I'm training my mind to accept the negative. It can't be done. And so what I'm more likely to do, even if I know this, even if I'm conscious of this, even if I make the effort, if I don't grab on to negative thoughts at times and turn them around, I'm training my mind. It's okay to accept them. In fact, it might be more dangerous because my mind is like, he means his shit. I mean, he's always telling me what he wants me to do. And he's always pretty clear about it. So he must mean this negative thing, even though he doesn't usually do negative things. Right? He's a competent CEO. He said to do it, I'm going to go do it. That's how the brain works. So we really have to grab onto this. And that's why I even bothered having the discussion about the seemingly woo-woo things like law of attraction. I'm going to tell you it works a lot. Like if you've ever heard of somebody that's called a mentalist, they look like a magician, but they're really not. They can go and they can do a psychic reading and they'll tell you it's not really a psychic reading. They'll go into a room and, like, you know, they'll do the same thing like a supposed psychic who's actually a mentalist does. And they'll tell a person, oh, you had an uncle, or was it an uncle? His name was Tim. Tim, you had a Tim in your life, didn't you? Yeah, and he's gone now, yeah. And, like, they'll figure out by what they're saying and reading the room who to call on, who to say that that applies to. And they'll do it so well that even when they reveal to the person they did it, look, I didn't know any of that shit. Here's how I did it. They won't, the person sometimes won't believe them. They'll think, oh, you're downplaying it. You really are psychic. Okay? That capability, a mentalist capability to notice things, a Sherlock Holmes-like sense of awareness, we all have access to it. And when we turn it on through what we call the law of attraction, it's running as a background process. And really need to understand that. I think everyone, at any time in your life, should have a list of 10 things you're trying to solve. Some of them might stay on your list for your entire life. I'd like more wealth, you know? I'd like more free time. I don't know. But at least half of them should change occasionally. And they can be things that are really important, and they can be things that, yeah, I'd be nice to know. But I think we should all have at least 10 things that we're consciously working on. And when I say conscious, I don't mean that we're walking around reading a list 10 times a day. If that's what you need to do to get in this state, fine. What I mean is that we have actually made the command, I want to know how to XYZ. How do we do it? Computer, solve this problem for me. And occasionally revisit it consciously. And there should be at least 10 things. Some of us, we have a natural inclination toward this, plus we've worked on it, that 10 is child's play. But I think the average person, if you just switch on 10 things that would make your life better if you cracked it, your life will get better. And this is why people can sell a book on the law of attraction and have tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or even millions of fans that say, Guru Saj, his stuff works. I have my, you know, I haven't gotten everything I wanted, but my life has gotten so much better. And you think that person's full of shit. They're not. They're misled, but they're not full of shit. Their life did get better. Possibly 100 times better. Possibly Guru Saj, whoever he is, I made him up, right, earned his $24.95 for that book. Even if he's being a misleading asshole. Even if he knows what he's doing consciously. Because if the guy got more than $25 worth of value out of the book, then isn't it a good exchange of value for value? It's just in the case of me telling you this, I'm telling you how it works. I'm telling you why it works. I'm not misleading you with some kind of metaphysical mumbo-jumbo. And I'm telling you, this works better than goal setting and positive affirmations and what have you. Let me explain one of the problems with, let's say, positive affirmation, right? I am wealthy. You say this over and over and over again. Soon you believe it, and then you act like someone who's wealthy. Maybe, to a degree, but you know what else you're doing? Now you're telling your computer, you don't need to work on wealth anymore. We're already wealthy. You feel better, but you don't necessarily take the actions to become a wealthy person. Think about it, like, if you're physically fit, and you actually are physically fit, you do enough work to stay fit. When you're fat, and you need to get physically fit, and you get the impetus under you, you work really hard, you weigh yourself every day. You know, if you walk by the mirror every day, and you're in good shape, you really are, and you look at yourself, yeah, I'm good. You don't have as much impetus for it. And that's something you do have to still work on. Right? But if I gave you right now, somehow I got stupid rich and I picked one, I ended up with like $50 billion. And I picked one person out of this audience and I wrote you a check for $1 billion. And then you actually thought, well, maybe the check's good. You went to the bank and you turned out it was. And after you got up off the floor from passing out and realized that you actually owned $1 billion, most people, because they're not sociopaths, would feel like, that's enough money for me, my kids, my grandkids, and my great-grandkids, and probably beyond that. And I don't need any more money. So you wouldn't go try to become Bezos or Elon Musk or whatever. You'd stop worrying about money for the rest of your life. You would no longer seek money, right? And if you're smart, you'd put yourself on some kind of allowance so you didn't screw your life up too much. But then, like, that question, how do I get more wealth, would go away. Because you don't need to do it. When you give yourself positive affirmations as though you've already achieved something that you have not achieved, on some level, you're shutting down effort toward attaining them. Poor people, when they are sufficiently in the right mindset, have a tendency to become richer, faster than people born into middle-class levels of income with good, stable jobs. Why? Because the person that's middle-class with a good, stable job that has reasonable income has not just comfort, but can create for themselves the delusion that they're wealthy. They can join the country club, they can buy a Lexus, whatever, and they might be damn near broke all the time. They have high cash flow, but they don't have high underlying wealth. But they believe they're wealthy, so why try? Right? Now, the poor person eating his fifth pack of ramen this week and saving up so he can afford stovetop stuffing and a piece of chicken on Friday is acutely aware of the fact that he is poor. He's acutely aware that if I sit around and say, I am wealthy, I am lying to myself. It is much more difficult for that person to delude themselves. But if they come across this mindset and they say, I want to be wealthy, they will then take the action. Because I got it. I got to do it. I can't live like this for the rest of my life, and I don't have to. So it's often the case the rags-to-riches story is more common than the comfortable-to-riches story. That doesn't mean it's you're benefited by being poor. The person that's middle class actually has a faster path if they choose to initiate it and use it and take it because they have more to start with. But they can convince themselves that means they have more to lose. So then they can talk themselves out of success. This is real stuff, guys. And goal setting, positive affirmations, they're okay for what they are, but they're nowhere near as useful as specifically stating, this is what I want, and asking your mind, how do I get it? The goal setting's better than the affirmation. The goal setting leads to planning. The goal setting is something that works for some people because what people say is, like, it's been proven that people write down a plan are more likely to achieve it than people that don't. I think across the average, that's true. Not everybody works the same, though. I'm the kid that sat in school, didn't look like he was paying attention, took no notes, and got A's on a test. Why? That's how my mind works. So sitting down and writing goals for me doesn't really help me very much. Running through goals in my head on the fly helps me a lot more. I don't do a lot of written planning. I'm not that guy. I'm an ESTP on the Myers-Briggs personality test. I think big picture. I don't like getting drugged down into details. That's why whenever I've had anything business-wise that requires a detailed approach, I hire somebody that has that strength. Right? So I'm not going to be the person that's going to be sitting down writing down my goals every day. I'm going to go through my goals while I'm freaking walking the dog, right? I'm flipping in between channels, and in between the channels, I'm thinking this way. So if you don't do that, then maybe goal setting is good, but the goal should be attached to one of those 10 problems. And it should be at least 10 problems. It could be more. But the positive affirmation, I actually consider positive affirmations a negative. Unless you're so depressed you need it to get out of depression, I guess. Otherwise, I think what they do is they shut off the desire to actually achieve what you claim that you have. And I also have to add this here at the end. And this goes back to kind of an internet marketing sales type guru guy who didn't have everything right, but he had a few things right that I really learned from and never forgot. And one time he was talking about pricing your product. And this guy sold, like I do, mostly information. He didn't sell physical product. So if you can charge more for the same thing with information, you just make more money. Right? If I can get you to pay me $10 more for MSB, then I just make more. If I sell the same amount, I get more profit because I have no real heavy underlying cost of support. All right? So that's where he was coming from. And what he said about your price was, if your price doesn't make you at least a little bit uncomfortable, it's too low to raise your price until you feel uncomfortable. And your market will always accept you putting the product on sale but they're going to be really hesitant to accept you raising the price. So make sure you price high in the beginning. You can always go down. It's a lot harder to go up. Solid advice. What does that have to do with everything we're talking about today? You know those 10 problems? If none of them seem too big for you to solve them, if none of them make you uncomfortable putting them on that list of your problems you're working on, raise your standards. You need at least one that when you say you're going to do it, you go, I'm not totally comfortable saying that. Right? If you have a big ego like me, I have a weird day. I'm humble and a big ego at the same time. It's a weird thing. But, you know, if you have like this incredible belief that yes, I can, you may have a hard time finding something like that. But you should. You should. You should have something that you just, remember I talked about with our sponsor today, Western Botanicals, their goal to put an herbalist in every home? That is the hurdle on the track that you'll never clear. But every time you try to clear it, you're going to be able to clear one a little bit higher than yesterday until you reach an actual limit, a real limit, not a self-imposed limit. And that is what I'm talking about here. Because let's say that, you know, Randy over at Western Botanicals takes that goal seriously, and I believe that he does. Well, every day then, at least at some point, his brain is saying, how do I actually do this? How do I get an herbalist in every household? And even though he'll never get an herbalist in every household, he'll make more herbalists than if he didn't have that goal. So when you set a goal that seems like it's too big, you give yourself a problem that seems like it's too complex, the pieces of it that you do solve will get used, incorporated with other problems. Or maybe it will make you closer to reaching that goal, and therefore that's enough. If we did it just with, I don't like numeric value in this, but it's a good way to explain this. So if you made a goal, I'm going to become a billionaire, right? And 10 years later, you're worth $5 million, right? You have fallen short of your goal by $995 million, okay? Did you fail? Really? Did you? You went from, let's say, being worth like almost nothing to $5 million net worth in 10 years. Did you fail, or did you do better than most people will ever do? See, I think having that billion-dollar goal might be the why you failed yourself into being a multimillionaire. And again, I don't really like to do it numbers, but that's the concept I'm trying to get out to you, because whatever that goal is, it's going to be personal. It's going to be so telling you some goal I'm trying to accomplish won't really help you. I'll give you one, though. I'm trying to think, how do I create a global religion that gets around a lot of what the government wants us to have to do? It's not actually a religion, but it is a religion, according to them, because we'll call it that. And how many things can we then, and how many millions of people, if I did this successfully, could do that would be new liberties reclaimed because of this? Will I ever do that? I don't know, but I think about it. I thought about it this morning while I was listening to a podcast about DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, and I never thought of setting up a church or a religion or a faith, call it what you want to, as a DAO. And I never thought that a DAO was a way to do this, but I do now. And when I was listening to this guy talk about decentralized autonomous organizations, he had no intent that I would think that thought. And if I didn't have that goal in my mind, I would have never had that thought. DAOs are for running companies and giving people voting rights and control and basically allowing people to invest and allowing people to make money in a way that if you did it with conventional corporations in our modern day and age, you would go to Club Fed, and a DAO is a loophole to avoid that. What else can we do with a DAO? Can we make a DAO church? Can we maybe do something that lets people spend cryptocurrency without tax consequences? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. One of my ideas was back to when Virtual Nations first came out on my radar in 2014. What if you bought your way into a place like this, or you bought currency, but the currency created itself when you bought it, and you had to buy it with something like Bitcoin? And it was always held, and, you know, without a DAO, this doesn't really work, because back in 2014, when I didn't know what DAOs were, and they really weren't evolved very much yet, I didn't know how to do this, but I had this idea, would be basically like a vending machine. You go put $100 worth of Bitcoin in there, or a $500 worth of Bitcoin into this machine, and it mints tokens at a fixed exchange rate with Bitcoin, not the dollar. Well, now you know what the token's worth because it's backed by a Bitcoin, and you could just basically stick the token, the Libertas Church token, back in the vending machine, and it'll spit the equivalent amount of Bitcoin back out. It's back and forth swappable, but no one gets the Bitcoin. It's just held in a reserve for the church. It's run by a DAO that nobody owns, that nobody can pay taxes on because they don't exist. And the token exists exclusively for commerce between members, and our religion says that we can't pay tax on our own exchanges with each other. And there is no dollars. Does it work? Probably not. But I got all that as an aside from a podcast about using DAOs to restructure a service called Shapeshift. And I got more. I'm not going to go in anymore because it doesn't really matter. Because it doesn't matter if it works. What matters is now my brain's doing this. And now, just because we had this discussion today on the podcast, my brain's going to do more with this. Will I ever do it? I don't know. I'll do something, maybe. But I'm going to work on it. I'm not going to write it off as it can't be done. And I don't have to sit and think about it like a monk chanting and steaming off my back in the snow for 12 hours a day for my mind to work on it, and you don't either. If anything I said that I do with this seems like, well, that's something Jack can do, not something I can do. Stop. That's a negative thought. Reprogram it right now. I can learn to do what Jack does. In fact, I probably can be better at it than he is. That's what you need to think. How can I be better at it than Jack? Give yourself the same command that you would want to use it for. How can I be better at this? How can I get this into my mind? How can I think this way? Because I don't know. I don't know how you can. You're not me. I fully admit my mind is weird. It's different. I do have a high IQ. I'm incredibly creative. I'm incredibly motivated. Not everybody's like me. Good. Be freaking. We'd all be killing each other if we were all the same. It wouldn't matter if we were all like you or we were all like me. You ever notice that sometimes when you meet somebody and they're almost exactly like you, you don't get along? You ever notice that? When you meet somebody that's a lot like you, you usually get along really well. But when you meet somebody that's almost a clone of you, then you see everything good and bad in them, including all the bad, and you know the bad intimately because you know your own bad intimately. So it's good that we're different. Well, we need to acknowledge that difference and say this is a set of principles that can be implemented by anybody, but everybody's going to have to find their own way to implement it. Well, the first step in that implementation is ask yourself, how do I do this? How do I do this? What works for me? Would writing it down be better, or would just saying it be better? Would writing down a list of 10 things and then reading it to the point where it's memorized, and then once it's memorized, throw it away and just do it mentally? What works? I don't know. I do know, again, this process will run in your mind because it's how the human mind works, and you either harness it for good or it will absolutely work against you. With that, I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you did, you want to help support us in the work that we do, remember, one of the ways you can always do that is just do your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Start your shopping there. No matter what you buy, you will help the show, me, my family, the work that we do, all of it. I usually have an item of the day. Today, to note, what I have is an announcement of what's going on Amazon with Anchor. Anchor is my favorite electronics and technology value brand. What do I mean by a value brand? I mean that you look at, for instance, they're not on sale today, by the way, before I say this, but it's just a good example. Let's say they're Bluetooth earbuds, and you look at Apple AirPods, and you say theirs are as good or better than Apple AirPods. Apple AirPods are $150, and the Bluetooth earpieces from Anker are $40. So when I say value brand, I mean that they're bringing you technology that's as good or better than big-name competitors for far less money. They have a shitload of stuff on limited time deal of the day today. Here's a couple of the things they have. They have the upgraded Anker Boost Super Bluetooth speaker. I love that thing. The Anker Jump Pack 1000 amp for jumping cars, like a car starter. It will jump up to 6-liter diesels. A solar charger, 3 USB port solar charger, foldable panel, really great piece of kit. They have their 6-foot premium nylon coated lightning cables on sale today. I think 2 of them for $14. That's an example of value brand. Like, you go buy an Apple cable, it will never last as long as theirs, and you'll pay more for one of the Apple cables than for 2 of these. The Soundcore 3 Bluetooth speaker, that's a titanium diaphragm driver one. It's just like one of the best sounding speakers on the market. That's on sale today, way marked down. And on the speakers, the little 12-volt speaker I brought you guys like a year and a half ago, the ones that pair with each other and all, they're not on sale, but they're on Renewed for $10 off. So $29, they are a hell of a deal. I have a set of those. I love them. And they're durable. Friggin', I left one sitting on Dorothy's Outback. It fell off, and she drove over it, and it still works. I don't advise you try that. I'm just saying it was in dirt. It wasn't on pavement, and it gave a little. But, I mean, it caved in the screen and all. I'm probably going to buy one of the Renewed ones because it doesn't sound as good. But it does still work after being driven over by an Outback. Yeah, it wasn't a truck, but I don't want to get driven over by now, but check out the stuff that's on sale today. I have a link to all the items I mentioned in the write-up today. I also have a link that goes straight to all the items on sale on Amazon, the deals from Anker today. But as long as you start your shopping at T-Spaz, no matter what you buy, you help us out and the work that we do. And again, if I recommend something, I own it, I use it, I've touched it, I'd buy it again, or I wouldn't recommend that you buy it. All right, with that, let's go ahead and I got to remind you, last day of the sale for MSB. If you want to be an MSB member, $30 a year for life. Tonight, midnight Central Time, the discount code will stop working, poof, like a fart in the wind. So if you want in on that sale price, get it done today. Remember, I am the guy. I don't care if your dog ate your discount code. A sunset date on a sale is a sunset date on a sale. Either that or you don't have integrity. All right, with that, let's go ahead and wrap things up with our song of the day. I enjoyed doing Jimmy Buffett Week for a couple of weeks, and I thought, let's do some stuff with some other artists and play some of their stuff, maybe some of their really well-known stuff, some of their lesser-known stuff. And I decided this week to do Billy Joel. And I wanted to do that because the story I'm going to tell you that goes with this song fits well with the mental programming that we talked about today. Back when I was in high school, I had a teacher named Dr. Sakavich. This guy was an amazing teacher. He taught so well that he actually got checked out by the school board. They thought he was giving too many A's to kids who didn't get A's in other classes. And it turned out that none of the people that checked him out were able to actually pass his test because they didn't have his class. And this guy's tests were you'd have 20 terms, and then you had 20 other terms, and you had to match them. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Well, the thing is, there was no individual right answer. You could have literally made any connection you want. Now, you might run out of valid connections if you were too loose with this. But once you made the connection, you had to, within a sentence or three, explain the connection. Right? So, we're going to talk about who we didn't start the fire today. If there was Rosenbergs in one side and H-bomb in the other, you might explain that the Rosenbergs were executed for giving away our secret nuclear secrets to the Russians. That would be a correct answer. You had to do it with all 20 terms. And this guy was amazing. He was like Rich Little. He could do impersonations and things like that. And it so stuck with you that today I can tell you almost everything the guy ever taught me if you ask. Like, I can't recall he taught me this thing, but if you ask me a question that I learned from him, I'll probably remember the answer. And then when I do remember the answer, I'll remember it was from this guy. Because he had this way of connecting with people by using things like impersonations, by being kind of a soft guy when it came to teaching. Like, if you wanted to eat candy in his class or whatever, he didn't give a shit. He didn't care. You could eat. You could do it. As long as you paid attention and you did well on his test, he left you alone. He didn't have to be hard-ass because he was so good at what he did, you wanted to listen to him. And I remember when his song came out. I had him the year before this song came out. And all of my friends and I felt like we knew like 80% of what was in the song because of his class. And what was really interesting, this was the more interesting part, when there was something in that song that you didn't know, and this is before the internet, you had to go like to the library or whatever, you went and looked it up, because having so much of the picture made you hungry for the rest of it. Now that has a lot to do with what we've talked about today. I do want to tell you a little bit more about the song, though, from Billy Joel himself, when he was asked about writing this song. I see it a bit as a cop-out. I also see acknowledgement in the song that it's a cop-out. I always thought this was just like a really creative idea to like take all this stuff and put it together in a song. You know, we didn't start the fire means we didn't do it, but it's here, and it'll be here when we're gone, right? And it was just that. That's all there was to it. Turns out it came to him after he had a conversation with Sean Lennon, one of John Lennon's sons. And he felt that all the things in this song that created all these problems that his generation, now he's 71 years old, so I'll get to that in a second, but the people that came before him created all this stuff that then he had to deal with and his whole generation had to deal with, even though they didn't cause the problem. He didn't say anything more about it. As soon as I read that, I thought, wait a minute, dude, you're 21 years older than I am, and I was around for some of this shit, especially for the last verse. And I think that's the acknowledgement that, yeah, you know, we didn't cause all these problems that we're dealing with today. The prior generation did. But we're causing problems that the next generation's going to have to deal with. With that, it's been Jack Spirico with another edition of the Survival Podcast.